We got the band back together. We're talking about the bubble. Rain and Jay's reunion right now on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's. Let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, 17 banners, way up in the rafters, Jay King, John Corrales, and Sam Jam Packard. Focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Welcome back to another Locked On Celtics podcast, and oh, this is going to be a good one. We have some special
guests.
Much
better than any recent version, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. If you can't tell, probably by the description or all of the tweets, that's Jay King, and that's Jam Packard. Samuel Jamison Packard III.
I jumped the gun so hard, I didn't even let you say anything. I just wanted to yell Jam, and
this
I did it.
This is so appropriate because it's like we had the hiatus. The NBA has the hiatus. We're trying to get back into this and get like our timing down, which is clearly way off. It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
Our timing was always off, even though it was glorious. Like, that was part of our charm, was that nothing ever worked right. Our audio sucked. We didn't know who to speak when. And
well, now we have like
battled with each other sometimes.
Well, you know, talk over one another. I had great points to make, you had mediocre points to make, so I had to like cut through.
That did happen.
I have hair, you didn't.
That's the only thing you have. That's the only thing you have.
And I don't really have much hair anymore either.
No, you've come down. You're like almost at my level. Almost at my level. And again, now my hair, my lock of hair is mostly by choice. It's not quite as much as by choice as it used to be, but it's still mostly by choice.
Nobody does full baldy by choice.
Oh no, I did.
No, some people do, but they totally do it because they know they're going to be balding.
Your hair dictated it.
No, when I first did it, it's very much like that Seinfeld episode where Elaine's boyfriend shaved his head forever, and then he starts to grow it back, and he realizes he's going bald. Like, when I first shaved my head, I had the full head of hair. But recently, there was a picture taken of me from behind, and I hadn't shaved my head for a few days, and I realized there was a little spot at the back. I was like, oh, shit, I'm actually going to lose my hair. So, and I wish it would hurry up because
recently,
I like the look.
Recently, you just discovered this, is what you're trying to tell us.
Recently, I saw how bad it was.
Okay.
But
I'm just glad I brought up a bald joke a minute into this podcast.
I mean, the
over-under was probably about a minute.
It's your go-to. It's your go-to. I wish it would hurry up because I like the look. I've got a knife-shaped skull. It works for me. It's a good look. I don't know.
Beautiful skull.
Yours looks a little sloped at one side.
I also have Shane Battier ahead. I don't know if you guys can see right now in the video.
No, I can't see that. This is awesome. This is awesome radio.
I have ridges everywhere. I look like Krang from the Ninja Turtles.
Wow, that's a deep cut.
I never watched Ninja Turtles, so.
You don't know Bebop and Rocksteady?
No. Nope.
That's a shame. Not a shame.
This is another hallmark. This is another hallmark of the Locked On Celtics podcast with the three of us. Making references that at least one of the other people does not get.
It's never three of three. It's always two of three.
There's always one person who goes, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. So there it is. All right, let's talk a little basketball, guys. We've been, you know, on the podcast, we've been doing the history and all of that stuff, talking a little bit about the restart, but haven't really had a bunch of people on to talk about the restart. Guys have been coming back. We've been talking to the players for the past few days. They're working out. They're leaving in a couple of days to go to Florida. After everything, where do we stand here feeling about, like, what's our feelings now about the restart? Where were you when they first said, we're coming back, and has your opinion changed since then with everything that's gone on? Jay.
I am still skeptical of the entire thing. I have been from the start. I've been kind of pessimistic about the entire idea, and I know why the NBA wants to do it. There are huge financial implications to resuming the season and holding a playoffs and having the eight dumbass regular season games in the Orlando bubble. But with the coronavirus still as crazy as it is, and with the truth that I believe seven teams have shut down their facilities over the last week due to COVID-19, and with the reality that players are going to have to travel and coaches are going to have to travel to Orlando within a week and then have like a week and a half until they start scrimmages again, and then basketball starts up soon after it, I just think there is such a great potential for bad outcomes from this, spanning from the worst outcome, which is at least one death in the NBA family, to a rash of injuries, to a team with however many players getting sick, basically not having to forfeit in the bubble, but having to figure out something with non-regulars, playing with non-regulars. And it's all very scary to me. And I don't think I'm the only one who thinks that, but I'm probably closer to the end of the spectrum where, like, I am very hesitant about all of it.
Oh, yeah, it's a bad idea. I mean, I feel like the decision to, like, come back or not come back, the NBA has made the wrong one in just, like, I don't think it's really worth it for the entertainment and like the money, even it to be made. I think like people will make their money. I understand that it's a huge financial implication. That being said, once you've made that decision, I feel like what all the experts are saying is like the NBA is doing the best that it can, given the circumstance that we're accepted that we're coming back. And so I feel like they're like have potential to do it well, or like all the precautions that they are taking are interesting. That being said, the recent numbers that are just skyrocketing in Florida are just not great. It's not the place you want to fly into and kind of hold this bubble. I think it's going to be madness. I think it's going to be utter chaos. They have all these plans, but they literally no one has ever done this before. And so there's so many things that people haven't thought of that have probably like they're going to have to actively problem solve. And it's like really depends on the leadership of the NBA and player buy-in. But like what happens when like a whole team gets sick and then like the rest of the players is like, I don't want to be here anymore. There's just a bunch of crazy implications that we have no idea what's going to happen. One, in terms of health, that's, I think, is the most important. Then in terms of like basketball, is like, how do you take all of those distractions and then still have competitive basketball in this like weird AAU environment? From like I'm fascinated to see what will happen and have accepted that they're going to come back, but I don't think it's the best idea, but I have no idea how it's going to proceed moving forward.
More of this Rain and Jay's reunion show in just a minute. But first, if you own a car, you're going to have to spend money on that car. Whether you're buying something big, like a fuel pump assembly, or something small, like windshield wipers, you need to go to rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can go there and shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. There is no need to go to one of those chain stores at some strip mall that you know when you walk in, there's no possible way they're going to have all of the different options that you want. You're going to go shopping for something. You're not just going to go take what they give you. You want to shop around. So that's why you want to go to rockauto.com. And chain stores, by the way, have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. So you're going to be paying more than the mechanics. They're getting a break. rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody. They are reliably low. rockauto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear. That's kind of silly. That's what airlines do. You don't want that for your car parts. rockauto.com is for everybody. It does not require a membership. It does not require a login. Why pay up to twice as much for the same parts you're going to find somewhere else? Go to rockauto.com and do it right now to see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. It's an amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. What's happening in Florida is clearly horrible, but I'm not concerned about the NBA players going into Florida because they're flying a private chartered jet. It's not like they're going to a hot spot. They're going to a bar. They're going to a restaurant. They're going from the plane to a bus to the campus, the bubble. So that could be anywhere. It looks bad. Like the optics, I think, look bad, but I don't think the players are at risk because they're just going from controlled environment to controlled environment. Now, the Disney employees are that's certainly a concern. Who's coming in? Who's coming out? Who's touching what? What can be contaminated? That stuff is the biggest concern for me. And I've said a bunch of times on the podcast, forcing Disney to bring people back to work, is that putting people at risk? Are people who rely on these jobs, who are desperate to work, who might have symptoms, who are hiding symptoms, I think is the most dangerous part of this restart. But the players, I think the soft tissue injuries are a bigger risk to the players than COVID is at this point, because it's such a controlled environment.
That may be true, but if you look at the MLS bubble, which was set up in Orlando, Florida,
yeah,
at Disney World, one team has already been forced to pull out because of a rash of positive COVID-19 tests. I believe they all came after they traveled to Orlando.
No, some of them showed up like positive. So that was probably part of the problem.
Wasn't it? I admit I didn't listen to read it very closely, but from what I understand,
of course you didn't. It's the MLS. It's no one really cares.
But didn't they like test negative, then get on the plane and then come off the plane and test positive, which means some people had it. They all got onto a plane. It spread on the plane. And then when they got there, they tested positive. So they didn't get it.
We all know as Celtics, people who follow Celtics, how powerful one plane ride can be. I mean,
yes, that's true.
It can change a season around. It can infect an entire FC Dallas. I mean, so I don't know.
I think that just goes to show the risks. Like,
sure.
Because these positive, you can be positive and not test positive right away, and then you can spread it to a bunch of people. And like traveling to the bubble, that's part of this too. And maybe guys get sick, and maybe it's a coach, and maybe he's an older person, and that's not good. None of this is good, and all of it has risk. And I know that the NBA bubble is like really supposed to be a safe environment, but I think there are concerns about getting there. I think there are concerns about the lag in testing and the cases actually showing up on those tests. And I think what players
what about the super ring that they're going to wear?
And I think what players have voiced as a concern is they don't necessarily trust all the other players to follow the rules of this bubble. So that's another potential issue.
That's the thing. And I'm so wholeheartedly agree with Daniel Tice when he said, if you're going down there thinking you're going to break the rules, then don't even bother going. Just don't go. And there's so much at stake. And this is why we're even talking about this, why the NBA is even doing this, because there is so much at stake, not just the return and making money, but it's the future of the league. The fact that they could probably afford to lose the money. In fact, they're proving they can afford to lose the money by putting this thing on in the first place, because the entire thing is going to cost over $100 million for them to just put basketball on in this bubble. So they're doing it for some of the money, but they're spending a ton of money too. But it's about the future, setting salary cap, how much these guys get paid, making sure that they can put this on. It's I've heard it described from some of the national writers as almost like a litmus test, because this virus isn't going away by the time December rolls around, when the next season is supposed to start. And a lot of the things that they can do and figure out, like, okay, we did this, we're going to fix this, that's going to be implemented when next season rolls around. And maybe instead of a bubble, they're doing it in just the arenas, fans. So there's a lot at stake besides just some money. And if some idiot runs around and screws us up and gets an entire team sick and forces the NBA to cancel it, that just is beyond selfish. That would be the absolute worst thing you can do. And I know that, like Dame Lillard said what he said, and I hope that they're not that stupid. I hope that it's impressed upon everybody that, look, it's going to suck for a few months, but if you do this and do this right, we can come out the other side showing everybody that it can be done, and we can get to next season and without losing that much of a step.
Yeah, theoretically, like, yes, it would be very easy for players to look at this situation and say, you know what, this is only 3 months of my life. It's 3 months inside a bubble, maybe 1.5 months for certain teams. But you're also asking young players, young millionaires, who normally have all the freedom in the world, and asking them to abide by a very strict set of guidelines, which sound like absolutely no fun for at least a month and a half, up to 3 months, without women, without parties, without a lot of the things
the players
that these
can
guys
get by for
enjoy.
3 months without, like, hooking up in part. They've been doing it. Like, what parties have they been going to for the past, like, couple
Who
of
knows?
Months?
Who knows?
This is their profession, though. Like, I think they can get by without, like, having sex for a couple of weeks. And there's literally, you're allowed to bring your wife, like the top tier players.
After a month and a half,
rooms.
You're allowed to bring your wife.
Yeah, so that's something to play for, you know? I want to be in the playoffs. So
this is the one.
I'm just saying, there will be temptation.
Sure there will be. But I really think it's so overblown to sit there and be like, oh, well, these guys aren't going to be able to have sex for 6 weeks. Like, I mean, come on. Like, that should be the least of anybody's worries. Like, you
John,
can't
these guys aren't like you. That's not the norm for them.
They're used to having sex. Now, see, Jay, as
got
a known him. Sex haver,
it,
has a,
got
has a
him.
Unique yeah. perspective on this.
I don't know. All right. Yeah, I set myself up for that one. Let's take your victory.
They're coming
lap,
back.
You dunked
on me.
Yeah,
coming back. And it's just like we're at the position where it's like whatever happens, like they're going to have to deal with it and learn from it. And someone's going to get sick. It's just like what level of person gets sick will determine the response. Because, you know, DeMar DeRozan gets sick. I don't even know if he's going, but like someone who's just not in the playoffs and someone, I thought of DeMar DeRozan initially as like someone who sucks, but that's just my own personal bias. But if like LeBron James gets sick, then that changes things. Like, I think that's the biggest unknown is how do they deal with, they have all these strict rules in place for how to remove people and like the, what needs to happen if someone gets the virus and like, don't practice. Like if you get tested positive, you're not supposed to be able to like practice for the next like week, but say you're asymptomatic, like I believe Marcus Smart was, and you're in the middle of the Eastern or Western Conference Finals, like who's telling LeBron James that he can't practice when he's asymptomatic? Or like,
well, the doctors,
I don't know,
are
the obvious example to the most extreme is LeBron. I know, but do they listen to the doctors? If the deference to the medical opinion, they wouldn't be having a bubble in the first place. Like clearly there's an incentive to put on like the best product. At what point do you try to keep the fact that like LeBron, like Rudy Gobert had it and played and only apparently got Marcus Smart
Now, I'm pushing back hard on this one because I don't think it doesn't matter who gets it. If LeBron tests positive, then he goes into isolation and that's the end of the story. And it sucks.
Do you think the NBA will like actively yes. be like, LeBron tested positive, we have to remove him? Yes. Do you have faith in the NBA to do that?
You have to. Like you can't
capital. They need to make that
no,
money.
This like, is, but this is they've set us all up for this. It doesn't matter if it's Giannis. It doesn't matter if it's LeBron. It sucks if it's those two. But you can't if Giannis has it and tests positive and plays. Somebody's going to find out. What's worse, Giannis or LeBron not playing, or Giannis and LeBron playing and it coming out saying they're positive for coronavirus. And the NBA knows it, and they still let him out there. I argue that the second one is worse.
What if it's game seven of the NBA finals?
Doesn't matter.
Giannis is going up against LeBron, and it's like Giannis tests positive, and so you're going to remove Giannis from game seven of the NBA finals?
You have to.
I'm with John on this one. I think the league has to and should and ultimately will follow the coronavirus guidelines that they've set up. The questions I have are more so like, what is the threshold that they need to reach to shut the whole thing down? What happens if they're in the playoffs and a single team has an outbreak and let's say seven or eight players get it? And what if it's LeBron and Anthony Davis and five other Lakers? Like, do you just basically have the Lakers forfeit the rest of the way? Are they just basically doomed? Or do you figure out some other alternative? Or at that point, with an outbreak like that, is the whole thing shut down? Like, there are things that could pop up in this bubble that hopefully won't pop up in this bubble that will promote questions that we haven't seen answers to yet, and that I'm not sure there are any good answers to.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
I also want to point out, like, Germany did have a bubble and it did go really well. There were no positive tests in the BBL league, and it's very different from what the NBA is doing because there are way, way more people in what the NBA is doing, and they'll be there for a much, much longer time. But there is at least like some hope that this could go off well.
I'm not advocating for them to like actively, like, I think they should follow the protocol. I'm just saying that I don't have faith in the NBA of actually following through on that. I feel like I don't know what would shut them down other than a death of someone inside the bubble. I feel like they've made the decision. And once you make the decision to go, all subsequent decisions are like attempting to justify that decision to like bring everyone to the bubble, spend $150 million. Like, I just think it's human nature. Like, you become this like kind of self-justifying, like, well, we need to keep going, like, or else we brought all these people down and it was for nothing. I just don't see them shutting down. They're for their own self-preservation at this point. And so I just like think that they're going to act in their own self-interest. That's why I don't think they should follow like, or should keep Giannis in a game if he tests positive. I just don't have any faith in the NBA to like not act in its own selfish self-interest.
I would say that when it comes to a player testing positive, there are so many levels of people who know that this player has tested positive before it gets to the team. So I think there's going to be some level of information out there that it's not like Danny Ainge is doing the tests and says, oh, Jason Tatum's positive. Let's not tell anybody. There are medical people. There's a system in place that is going to tell people.
Brad has been watching film on administering tests all summer, and he's going to be right. The lone tester, and he's never going to reveal test information at least before the start of the game because, you know, competitive advantage.
Right. As far as the line, I think I've said before, you could have 10 cases of and have it be two completely different scenarios. You could have 10 individual cases that show somehow the virus got into 10 different people and it's just individuals. And I think the NBA would just continue on. But if you had 10 cases that showed one person got it and spread it to 9 other people, then that becomes an outbreak. And if you get to like an outbreak scenario, then that's when the league has to really consider shutting things down, pausing, figuring out something else. I don't know if there's a plan B in there or something, but
made me think of a question. What is the official timeline that someone can test positive and then return? Say Marcus Smart, or no, he already had it, but like Jason Tatum test positive in the early days, but he can like come back for in some point in September and like start playing again. And like, does that get messed with at all? Where it's like, well, I don't know, he tested positive like a week and a half ago. We don't think he's like he can share the virus right now, but I don't know. I actually just don't know what that guideline is. And I feel like there's so many decision points where it's like, you should defer to the medical opinion, but I guess that's my inner skepticism is just like, I don't trust the NBA to always do that because they've already decided to like bring back the league when that's just not the best medical choice.
Well, I don't think that's set in stone because I think originally a positive test was supposed to be a 14-day quarantine, but I think now it's, I don't know what number of days, but I think if you produce negative tests on back-to-back days, you might be cleared. So, however,
okay, so Danny Ainge might be cooking the books on those back-to-back negative tests. I mean, there's
right.
potential for right. corruption at any point of these decision-making process. I just think it's like a new environment where we just have no idea what's going to happen. And so it's like, it's fun to speculate. I don't know if it's fun to speculate, but I think my being a skeptical dude just being like, oh, the NBA is going to be selfish at every single step of the way.
And assuming that Adam Silver was telling the truth when he said the NBA has not set a threshold for like when to shut things down and how to react if there is a major outbreak inside the bubble, I think it's fair to be skeptical that they will come to a smart solution for that, because that should have been like one of the first things they decided on. Like, what if there's a disaster in this bubble, in which there could very well be a disaster? What happened? How do we respond if someone gets very sick and has to go to the hospital? How do we respond if there's a death?
Well,
how do
I
we
think
respond
they had that
if there's
place.
this, and this? But he said, he came out and said, like, we don't know the threshold yet for when we would shut this down, how many cases it would take inside the bubble for us to shut down. So how many other questions have they not answered yet? And when are they planning to answer those? And what will those answers be? Those are pretty
important.
They might
have that information they might have them internally, but not like be willing to release that because then it ties their hands. But I was like, the thing about the NBA is like, they generally feel like a competent organization. And so as much as I'm a skeptic and question their, I guess, core values, I feel like Adam Silver, like all the things you read are like, if you're going to have a bubble plan, this one's a pretty fucking good bubble plan. So like, I trust like the competence of them, like making a decision and implementing it. But
why? I see. I'm going against you on this one. I don't think people should trust the competence. I mean, the NBA is seen as like this leader when it comes to coronavirus because they shut down when Rudy Gobert tested positive. Well, do you know what they had done before that when the coronavirus had already started to rage? Nothing. They still allowed fans right up until the end. Their major change was having media members stand at least 6 feet away from players and not go in the locker room. Like, that was the one major change
players still went out and signed autographs for fans. Like,
and they told players not to sign autographs or like slap hands with fans. That was it. And like that was their major change. And so I think the skepticism about how they'll react to changes in the environment and changes in the ecosystem of the coronavirus within the bubble, if such a need pops up, I think it's very fair to be skeptical whether they'll handle those the right way.
I think this, you can't come into this without any skepticism. We all have skepticism. I have optimism, but that doesn't erase the skepticism. So I do think there are serious questions. I trust that enough people are involved in this and that they know that the fallout from something going wrong and handling it the wrong way is much worse than the fallout from canceling the season. Like, if something goes wrong and erring on the side of, all right, let's just shut it down, will be received as like, hey, at least they saw the problem. Like, they'll still get slammed for doing it in the first place, but at least they saw the problem and shut it down, versus trying to play through it like an injury. I think just from everything that I've seen and how they've spoken, I think everybody understands that this is how serious this is. So, I mean, look, Carl Anthony Towns already lost his mom. Like, the NBA knows how serious this is. I don't think they're going to put anybody at risk like that. And the worst case scenario of shutting something down is the bad PR hit, and hopefully however many people get sick recover. But the worst case scenario of, well, we're going to push this because we've spent all this money and we're going to put this guy out there, is that he becomes the super spreader. 10 guys get it. They have, by that point, you're in these scenarios, we're talking about having families in the bubble. So guys will be going home. If you put a star player in a playoff situation like that, and all of those guys that he played against go home to their families, and one of their family members gets sick or a kid gets sick, then not only does the NBA have bad PR, the NBA gets lawsuit. The NBA goes into a place that I can't even begin to speculate. So we'll see how that – go ahead.
I think we should also point out, like, it's fair for the NBA to believe, or at least it's not outrageous for the NBA to believe, that players will actually be safer inside the bubble than they would be otherwise. We've seen Nikola Jokic, who later tested positive at like some AAU tournament looking event, just hanging out like it was normal times. We've seen Trae Young playing pickup games with like crowds in the stands. We've seen, I think Ish Smith came out today and said if he wasn't going to the bubble, he'd be playing back home in, I'm sure, what would be a much less regulated set of circumstances. So I think in some cases, like, the NBA players will actually benefit from going to this bubble. And I think it's fair for the NBA to take that stance. But I also think it puts a lot of pressure on people who would otherwise be safe to then go to the bubble and take on risk that they probably wouldn't be putting themselves into otherwise. I'm sure there are some coaches, some staff members, some players who would be as safe as possible throughout this and trying to avoid other people and trying to lay low until, you know, we get a vaccine or whatever happens, that this is somewhat solved. So I think there is pressure on those people that's iffy to say the least.
It all depends on people. It's the same, really, when you boil it down, it's the same as what's happening in Florida and Texas and everywhere else. We are going to rely on people making good decisions. And clearly, there's a lot of people out there that are not capable of making good decisions. And we're seeing it with the spikes in these cases. I'm hoping that the NBA can impress upon its players that, you know, you look at a place like Massachusetts, you look at some of these states where the cases have kind of leveled off and we're doing well, and you say, hey, look, they mostly listened and they're doing better. Florida and Texas, they aren't listening, and look at what's happening. If you go out there and do what Texas and Florida do, you're going to screw the whole thing up. If you go do what, you know, the right thing, we're going to do this. We're going to look good. We're going to come out of this. It's going to suck for 3 months, but just like almost begging, like just please, please don't screw this up. And it's really up to the players and the staff and the coaches to do the right thing. Maybe you'll get a case because other people are in and out, and maybe something will slip through and somebody's going to get it. And there's all of these protocols that ring if people are wearing it, the daily testing. Hopefully these protocols catch it and it's an isolated case and you can treat it like an injury like they want to. But ultimately it comes down to, are people going to see this and take it seriously and follow regulations, follow the rules and get through this? And if they're not, then we're going to have some of these problems. But I think if they do, I think we could have a positive result.
Which that's the thing, is negative, like, results everywhere.
But it's like the reliance on people is reason for skepticism, because as evidenced by the both south of the Mason-Dixon line, people generally make bad decisions and are dumb. That's a universal statement. People are dumb. The question is whether you rely on the specific people who are going to be in the bubble, the NBA, as like people that all three of us have interacted with in terms of like players, coaches, and staff, and like the organization of the NBA. Do you rely, or do you think that they can perform better than the general public in terms of decision-making? I hope so. I feel like they have a good plan in place. I do question their, I guess, motives of like wanting profit over, I guess, general safety. But I do like generally think that Adam Silver is a like good person and is wants what's best for the players. And so there's like a balance there of like, if we're just going to trust people, then I don't know. The bubble seems like a bad idea, but for some reason, I just have this like faith that they're people understand how important like basketball is, and like how like this is like a important, I guess, test for how to return, and people will take it seriously. But I don't know. My skepticism is that like we're relying on people, and people generally make bad decisions.
That's true. You got some basketball, some actual basketball,
some hoop.
I was watching the basketball tournament yesterday, and man,
just watching it is just brings just back all these
so much of joy,
emotion. All right, what we'll do is we're going to switch over to the Anything Is Potable podcast. Talk about actual basketball.
The Better Celtics podcast.
Depending on your measurement of,
well, if we had to vote for the best Celtics podcast out of the three of us, I think an overwhelming majority would say Anything Is Potable.
Well, I think the vote would be split, and then one person would have just kind of have to feel obligated to go along with the other. So
I don't know about that. I feel like in a representative democracy, I think Anything Potable wins out, but that's just me.
Well, I don't know. Are you doing mail-in ballots? Because we all know that those can be rigged.
I mean, absolutely, we're doing mail-in ballots.
All right, let's go over to Anything Is Potable. We're going to do the thing that we do is pick game by game. We're going to do the game by game schedule thing again. All right, we'll do that. Buddy. Thanks for listening to this very special Locked On Celtics podcast. It's always fun to talk to the guys again. It's great. Miss them. I'm going to say the nice things now, not to their face, but miss podcasting with those guys. I'm sure you guys miss having us podcasting together. Go to the Anything Is Potable feed, because the rest of this podcast, we talked for an hour and a half. This is like 35 minutes of it. We went and did the pick every game thing. Only 8 games, but we managed to squeeze an hour out of picking 8 games, because that's what we do when the Rain and Jays get together. So go check out the rest of the podcast over there. Meanwhile, tomorrow we're going to continue the historical deep dives. I know that was supposed to be today, but these guys called, and what am I going to say? No? So the deep dive continues tomorrow, the first year of Brad Stevens' tenure in Boston, and whatever else happens during the day. So be sure to subscribe to the podcast. If you have not, if you have subscribed, please, 5-star rating, a good written review, very, very helpful. It goes a long way. Trust me. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. Go to rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Now, go tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On Fantasy Basketball.